Okay, so let's just review a little bit from yesterday, right? So we said that, we were trying to figure out the nature of Dash B2, and we were focusing on the Tosef, who his main question is, right? Is Dash B2 to be understood as an active mitzvah to destroy, right? Active meaning destroy, right? Or passive, I mean, this is essentially a corollary of Balayurai, right? Right? Or the corollary of Balayurai, right? That
you shouldn't have it, and if you don't have it, so then you fulfill Balayurai, you avoid Balayurai, is passive,
and the Nafkamina that he brings is, right, do you have to buy tamates to destroy, right, where maybe and no, right?
Right, that if it's a mitzvah to actively destroy, then if you don't have tamates, you should do it. You should make sure to have tamates to destroy. If it's passive, obviously you've already fulfilled it. Now, we noted that this is going to get a little bit complicated because within this you're going to have to ask. I'm just going to put up on this side the questions that we're not dealing with today, but the question that Mordechai brought up, which was when, right? Even if you think there's a mitzvah to actively destroy, right? When is that, right? So the normal time obviously is right before the 14th, right, at Chasod, and with the Derabbanan extensions, right? Right, but what you have to ask, but theoretically you have to ask both about, right, earlier, right? Is there an earlier time at which you could fulfill this mitzvah? And also later, right? And this was where we mentioned briefly the Balamor, right? Yeah, exactly, right? So so in brackets, we have to deal with this question of when, but we're going to deal with that afterwards, right? Because that's obviously the topic of the first Mishnah, which is Oral Arba Asar. What we want to deal with today is, okay, we said that there's a mitzvah of Teshvita. It could be either active or passive. But now we got to figure out how do you destroy it, right? So here we have a machloket, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Bir ein yashriva ella." Right, it has to be burned. And the Chachamim say, "Mifarer v'zorel rorach." Right, you could crush it up and throw it into the wind. And we said, "Okay, what is the machloket?" Now, yesterday we had a few possibilities. One could simply be, as Ezra pointed out, the grammatical question, right, which is, right, does liba'er mean, right, the word liba'er can either mean to destroy, burn, right, bi'or can either mean, right, bi'or can either mean burn, right, like in havara, no, or get rid of, right, like biarti hakodesh, minabayit, right, in next week's parsha. But even if it is a linguistic machloket, it might have conceptual, right, implications. So what is the machloket, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Chacham? So what do you think, right? Tashbidu is an active passive. Let's see within each of these whether Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim can plausibly hold this model of Tashbidu. Okay, here, passive. If Teshbitu is passive. Yes? If it's Teshbitu is passive, does this work for Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim? What do you think? Good, right? Rabbi Yehuda probably cannot hold this. So Rabbi Yehuda clearly has to be here because he says you must burn it, right? He tells you not just that you have to actively destroy it, but how you have to actively destroy it. Now, it's possible, right, that he will still think that if you don't have any chametz, that you don't have to buy it, right? So this is not an exact parable, right? Because this question is, right, Rav Chaskina's question, active, passive, is do I have to have chametz to burn, right, to destroy? The second question is, if I do have chametz, how do I destroy it, right? But it definitely brings Rav Yehuda closer to the active thing, right? Because he thinks that, right, that there is a specific act of burning, right? So the act of destroying is conceptually significant. Now, again, does that mean necessarily that he thinks you need to buy chametz to burn? No. Right? These are technically two different questions, right? One is it active or passive? And then is the second question, which is, right, if you have chametz, so how do you destroy it? Right? Now these are, again, these are not identical questions. One is about the nature of the mitzvah. The second is, when I am destroying it, how do I have to do it? Right? Well, Moshe made this point?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Right, right, meaning they're not necessarily going to be mapped out. Just because Rabbi Yehuda said that when I destroy it, it must be burnt, right, doesn't necessarily imply that he thinks you have to actively find something to burn. It just means that if you have something to destroy, then it must be burnt.
So you could say that you have to actively destroy it, but that the mitzvah itself doesn't require going out to get it.
Correct, right? You could say that.
So you could say, listen,
if I don't have chametz, then I can do nothing. But if I have chametz, I have to destroy it. And on the flip side, what could you say? I must destroy it, but.
You can destroy it passive.
But I can destroy it in any way I want. Right? It's active, but I have to. Right? What is this going to depend on? Right? So now let's move to the second question, right? Which is the how question. Right? So again, so how do I destroy chametz? So how, right? So here I have, right, Rabbi Yehuda is burned. Right? And the Chachamim say, right, Afilu, Mifarer, Zareb, Ruach,
Mayam,
etc. Right?
Well, they say anything.
Yeah, I'm just quoting the Mishnah, right? So what is the difference? So we said one possibility was, right, linguistic, was Ba'er. Does it mean burn or clear out? Right? Then we said a second, conceptually, it's possible, but not that. That what? That Rabbi Yehuda thinks that Tashbitu is active, and that the Chachamim think it's passive. Right? And therefore, the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is Rabbi Yehuda says you have to burn because you actively have to destroy it in this specific way. The Chachamim, what they really mean to say when they say get rid of it in any way is? Yeah, it's just don't have it, right? With the open question of does he really mean active, right? Like, right, do you have to buy, right? Which he might not, right? He might just think that if you have it, you need to destroy it. But is this obvious? No, because what could you say? Right, right. Now, is it obvious that the Chachamim really mean this?
No.
No, because what could they mean? So this is the question. When you say that you can destroy it in any way, what might you mean?
That you have to do something.
Correct, right? It could mean that they agree that you have to do something active. The only thing is that they are more expansive about what that action could be. Right? So when you say you can destroy it in any way, does that mean what that really means is it's a passive kiyum and therefore it doesn't matter how you get rid of it, just get rid of it? Or do they agree that there's a mitzvah to actively destroy it? They just think that the actions that will count are more expansive than Rabbi Yehuda's, right? So, yeah.
Well, the examples they give make it seem like it's just getting rid of the.
Do they?
Okay.
So Binyamin says, well, the farer, Mizar, the Ruach, crumble it up and throw it into the wind, right? That sounds passive. Why does it sound passive?
When you're burning it, you're, like, destroying it beyond, like, beyond our commission.
Ah, so So what, therefore what?
In theory, you could go out and take your little crumbs and bring them back.
Okay, so first of all, you could have just said, right? Vinyan implicitly rejected the following, right? Which is that they have a machloket quantitatively, right? They have to destroy it. Yehuda says utterly, and the Chachamim say not utterly, right? But Binyamin takes it farther, and he says, no. There's destruction, and there's dispersion, right? Destruction, it actually is no longer extant. Whereas, Mefar Vizor L'Ruach, in theory, I could reconstitute it, right? I mean, in practice, I can't. But in theory, I could, right? And therefore, that shows that they don't really need you to destroy it. Now, not all the examples work that way, right? Because if you throw it into the yam, for example, throw it into the ocean, right, you have to wonder, is that destroy?
Sammy.
What? I assume so. Either that or there's like, you know, something. Yeah. Yes, it's lunch. Okay. Fine. It's already here. There you go. Okay. So this is where we move to Reb Chaim, because Reb Chaim has a short piece in which he really sets up the model, and we'll see whether what Reb Chaim says is obvious, right, or the only way to understand the sugya or not. But either way, the models that he presents are going to be very important. Okay. So, how many of you have ever learned Reb Chaim from start to finish?
I've been our entire lives.
An entire piece? No, not really. There aren't so many at Shviat, right? So, yeah, we did some things. I don't know if we read a whole piece, because this is a very short piece, which is why I gave you a whole one. So, Reb Chaim, as you probably know, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik is the father of the Brisker Derech, whatever the Brisker Derech means, but he clearly is the father of it. So, Reb Chaim writes as follows. Okay.
There's a word I looked up in here on the dictionary online, and it didn't tell me what the word meant, but it brought up something about the person that
yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that does happen. I'm always curious as to like how the algorithms learned what they learned. I don't know. At some point, I like ran something through Google Translate, and it had the word harav. And it translated it as Rabbi Soloveitchik, and I'm like, okay, I honestly have no idea, like, who was, you know, what, why you person was playing with this, such that that's actually what comes out of Google Translate. Okay. So, that... Before we actually start Reb Chaim, how many of you found Reb Chaim to be difficult? How many of you are not raising your hand because you're lying? Right, okay. Reb Chaim can sometimes be difficult to read. Yeah. Okay, but again, I want to remind, as much as there is going to be a seeming parallel between Menuchah Chinuch and Reb Chaim, they are, right, they're not the same. And for reasons that we'll see, we've mentioned some of them, but we're going to see that it gets even more extreme. Okay, so... Reb Chaim writes as follows. Ein Elokim mishum lo yireh v'lo yimatzeh, elam kein kana chametz v'pesach. He's quoting the Rambam. How's it going? Past the threshold yet? What? Really?
So 6 months. Okay, the Rambam, at least in this halacha, says that if I own chametz on Pesach, do I get malkut? No, because it was passive. But if I buy chametz on Pesach, you would. Now, this is not an obvious thing because, and we're not going to get into this now, but in general, the halacha is that lav she'en bo ma'asa in lo kana lav, right? A prohibition that does not have an action associated with it, you cannot get malkut for. But it's not. There are two ways of understanding that principle, right? One is that any lav that you happen not to do with an action, you don't get malkut for, or any lav that is defined as passive, right, is you can't get malkut for, right? It's defined as ein bo ma'aseh, even if you happen to come up with a way in which you can violate it actively, right? The nafkamina would be this case, right? Where normally, how do you violate bal yirah bal yimatzeh? By owning chametz. But you, in theory, could buy chametz, in which case you would have actively come to passively own chametz. So in such a case, if you think it's a practical thing, that anything that you happen not to do in action, which is what the Rambam is saying here, then you do get malkut. But if you say it's a categorical thing, so then that would not be the case. But Rav Chaim comments on this. And he says, Ukfar hekshu, dechloke klal alavi dilir velo yimatzei, v'arei v'psachim daf tzadim bevur lehedya, dilavi dilir velo yimatzei, havyan lav anitak la'asei ditashbitu. He says, well, wait a second, I have another problem. Forget the passivity question. Right? Even if you did violate it actively, there's another reason not to, and that's called lav anitak la'ase. What is a lav anitak la'ase, Kobe? A lav can be rectified with a positive commandment, and that's another one of the exceptions to the rule. So a lav anitak la'ase, you don't get malkut. The classic case of lav anitak la'ase is theft. You don't get malkut for theft because what is the rectification for theft? It's not beating the person. It's ve'yishivat gzeila asher gazal, is returning that which was stolen. But we don't because ein bo malkut because it's a lav anitak la'aseh. So he says v'kashal haRambam shepasak v'kona chametz bepesach ve'maaseh davimaaseh loke. So he says I don't understand if it is a lav anitak la'aseh of tashbitu. So then even if you violated actively, you should not get malkut. Okay, so here Reb Chaim introduces two models. Should I see how well you did and see if you can properly construct it, or should we try to read inside? Anyone? Anyone going to be brave? All the people who said, oh, I finished the makarot, give me more makarot. Me.
Someone did.
I know that this is the worst thing in the world. I'm aware of it. It's making you do this. I got it. I never wanted to be called on at least in Wilkinson's share. In any other share, I didn't really care. But in Wilkinson's share, I don't want to get. And I'm not that scary. So here's the thing with Reb Chaim, right? Reb Chaim, the book is, as its name is, right, the Chibur on the Rambam, is technically written as a commentary on the Rambam. However, the models, right, he often functions as more of a parish on the Gemara, offering conceptual models. Whether you have to stick to his pshat in the Rambam or take the conceptual models and apply them to the Gemara, right, or you take the models and disagree with their application, right, depends on the piece. But what does he say? Right, so in order to answer this question, what does Reb Chaim do? So this is one of the things you got to understand about Reb Chaim. Reb Lichtenstein used to point this out. Just one second, right? That one of the, that Reb Chaim, even though the book is framed as question and answer, right? A lot of times the method he's using is more setting up conceptual models that if you properly understand them, the question wouldn't really arise at all. So you can always you know, in theory, you could do this backwards, right? Come up with the conceptual models and then negate questions. But yeah, I do assume that Rav Chaim went through the Gemara first. Yes. So yes, I'm willing to make that assumption. So what does he say, right? So what does he say, Kobe? I know it's a hard piece. Well, no, it's not a super hard piece, but it's not an easy piece.
He says that
okay, good. Right? Okay, right. So the key to Rav Chaim is to understand what he's doing is saying that the machloka and the Riuda and the Chachamim isn't just everyone agrees that you destroy it, and then like it's a slight little quantitative machloket of how you destroy it. But rather, Rav Yehuda and Chachamim represent two completely different models of the nature of the mitzvah tashbitu. Right? That's Rav Chaim's fundamental insight. Now, how does he get there? So he says as follows: V'nireh bazeh dihine ha-gaon Rabbi Akiva Eger. The 1, 2, 3, 4, sixth line. V'nireh bazeh dihine ha-gaon Rabbi Akiva Eger hikshe ala tur. Rashi Bekiveger asked a question on the Torah. Shekatav, Dilei Rabbi Yehuda dechametz mitzvato b'sreifa, efro muter. So now, he brings in another rule, okay? There is a mission at the end of Torah. I debated whether to give it to you inside. Maybe I should have. I don't know. Right? But the mission at the end of Torah divides things that you have, that are asur b'hana'a, that are prohibited to benefit from, into two categories. Nisrafin and nikbarin. What are nisrafin? Things that you have to burn. And what are nikbarin?
Things you don't have to burn.
Things that you have to?
Not.
Yes. What's going on in that corner? Oh, is it? Amazing.
What else could it possibly be?
No, never. Never happens. So the what? Nope. So Rav Yehuda. Sorry. So the Gemara. So Mishnah says there are two categories. There's nikvarin and nisrafin, right? Things that should be burnt and things that are buried. And the Mishnah tells you that one of the big differences between them is that, one of the big differences is that things that are nisrafin, once you burn them, what happens? The ashes now are permitted, despite the fact that the original object was prohibited to benefit from. Now the ashes are permitted. However, nikbarin remain asur bahana, right? Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it would be, right? Something like that. Okay, so here's what he says. So now he says, okay. So he says, okay. The Torah writes that according to Rabbi Yehuda, after you burn it, the ashes are permitted. Ulur abanan dehashpato bechol davar efro asur kedina nikbarin. But according to the Chachamim, you can destroy it in any way. We treat it like nikbarin, and therefore, even if you burn it, the ashes remain asur according to the Chachamim. That's the tour. Okay. V'hikshel zeh agon Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger said, why? Defi mashekatu atotzvo dahadin nisrafin efren mutar v'nikbarin efren asur humishum din nisrafin ikam mitzvah b'srefatan. Well, kein heve ana aset mitzvatan. So Tosfot says, what's the difference between nikbarin and nisrafin? Okay, so right. So let's put it right. So. Right, what's the status of the there? Right? So nikbarin is mutar, right? And disrafin is
No, sorry. Nikvarin is Lazur, right? And Nisrafin is Mutar. Why? So Tosfot gives one answer, which is Naaseit Mitzvato. What's Naaseit Mitzvato?
Right, you did the mitzvah. Right? And there's a rule in general. The ones who've done something mitzvah, so for example, by Kachim, you guys did this a little bit last year. You might have been right, Ginsburg, when they did this. No? I don't know when you went, but I think we did this. You did a little bit of this mitzvah tell, right? That once something, the mitzvah has been done, the prohibitions evaporate. And therefore, by karbanot, right, once you're finished with the mitzvah, at that point, right, it's no longer prohibited. There's no longer an iser of mi'ila. Okay, there are certain exceptions, and that's what Mark tries to figure out, right? And that's discussion about Dam and Shemadadash.
It's still, they have the same punishment.
Okay, right, so he says, Tosfot says that the reason is not Saint Mitzvato. So now, according to this, the Torah says that Chametz, according to Yehuda, is, after it's burnt, is? You've done a mitzvah, and therefore the ashes are permitted to benefit from. And the Torah says that what about, according to the Chachamim, it's Asur, right? And what is Rabbi Kivanger's, what's the Torah's Svara? Since you didn't have to burn it, if you did burn it, it's not, right? It's still Asur. Rabbi Kivanger says, I don't understand. If the reason that something becomes permitted after you, right, after you burn it is because so if according to Chachamim, let's say you do burn chametz, did you do a mitzvah? Yes. So therefore, should it be permitted, even though you didn't have to burn it, but you did? So now, should they ask it, right? So Rabbi Kivanger says, I understand. If the reason that something becomes mutter is because the mitzvah was done, so if I do burn chametz, then Naaseit Mitzvato, the mitzvah is done. Who cares whether I had to or I didn't? Everyone agrees that what? That once I burned it, I fulfilled Tashbitu, and therefore it should be considered Naaseit Mitzvato.
You say you wouldn't have to because they're able to just bury it?
But so that's what Rabbi Kivanger's question is. I don't understand. Why does the Torah? The Torah says since you didn't have to burn it, even if you do burn it, the ashes remain prohibited, just like nikbarin, right? So if you have something which is meant to be buried and you instead burn it, does it become permit? Do the ashes become permitted? No, right? No, that's a mishnah. The nikbarin, the things that only need to be buried, if you do burn them, do they become permitted? No, right? Because there was no mitzvah to burn them. But Rabbi Kivi Eger says, but I understand, by chametz, everyone agrees that if I do burn it, I fulfill the mitzvah. And if I fulfill the mitzvah, then what? Then it should be that the Yisra Hanah evaporates. Right? And he says, V'hik jazek on Rabbi Kivanger. Dilfi mashikad v'atosvo. Based on what Jazek said, the Hadin Yisrafin, Efren mutar v'nikbarin, Efren asur. Hum yishum din Yisrafin, Ika mitzvah v'sveir fatan. Right? Tosvot said the reason that ashes become mutar for those things which you have to burn and not those things which you have to bury is because burning that which has to be buried is not a mitzvah. But things that have to be buried, there is no mitzvah to bury them. What does it really mean to say nikbarin? It has to be hidden away because you don't want to violate Isra Hana. But there is no mitzvah to do anything. It's just that practically we need it away. And that's why there's never a case of nasait mitzvatan. And that's why it doesn't come mutter. Right? V'lo avi nasi mitzvatan, but he says v'im kain, but if that's the case, b'chametz, the gamim hashpatato b'chol davar, even if you agree with the chachamim that you can destroy chametz in any way, halo ika mitzvah ditashbitu. You did fulfill a mitzvah. Im kain, atzarech liot lukule alma efren mutar. And therefore, according to everyone, once you do burn chametz, it should be permitted, right? That is Rabbi Kivi Eger's question. Yes. Only according to the Chachamim, correct. He's saying according to the Torah is saying only according to the Chachamim, right? Not according to Rabbi Huda. According to Rabbi Huda, he agrees that it would be mutar because it's been an Israfin. The Torah says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if I burn chametz, the chametz becomes permitted to benefit from. And according to the Chachamim, if I choose to burn chametz, which I didn't have to, but if I choose to, the ashes remain prohibited. Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, I don't understand why. If the whole reason that the ashes become permitted is because I did a mitzvah, and the mitzvah is over, so then according to the Chachamim, I didn't have to burn it, but if I chose to burn it, did I do a mitzvah? Yes. So therefore, the ashes should be permitted, right? That is Rabbi Akiva Eiger's claim. And what does Reb Chaim respond? Chaim says you got it wrong. V'nir'eh, d'lo dami ha-mitzvah shel tashbitu, tashbatato b'chol davar le-mitzvah tzrefa. You don't understand. The machlok of Yudan Chachamim is much more fundamental than this. Because it's not just that the Chacham and Yehuda are arguing technically how do you destroy chametz. What are they really arguing about? They're arguing, right, about the nature of tashbitu itself. Right? This isn't a, right? It's a much deeper machloket. And what are they really arguing about? Close. So what does he say? Let's read it inside and then we'll put it down. What does he say? D'lo dami mitzvah shel tashbitu, tashbatu b'chol davar l'mitzvah tzrefa. D'mitzvah tashbitu b'sharei hashbatot. Have ikar ha-mitzvah shlo yehei la-bailim chametz. Ma she'en kein ha-mitzvato b'sreifa have mitzvah shechayel ba-chefza shel chametz de-chalabau din sreifa. What does Reb Chaim say? Okay, it's almost passive active, but not quite. Right, what does he say? He says, what are the Chachamim, what does Rabbi Yehuda mean? When he says you have to burn it, what does that show that he means? How does he understand this? So, really what he's saying is as follows, okay? Is, does, this is, I hate these frisker terminology, but I'll let you use it once. Oh, very good, Chetzigabra, right? I hate Chetzigabra. But, let's explain it in normal language. Okay, Briskers will throw around the words tepsagabra, which means object, person. But what does that mean here? What does Reb Chaim say? How do you understand the mitzvah of tashbitu? There's two ways of understanding it. One is, it's a mitzvah in the chepsa, right? Well, let's start with gavra, okay? What would it mean for it to be a mitzvah in the gavra?
Gavra can be destroyed.
That the person should not have chametz. Right? Should not have chametz. And to that end, I need to destroy. And this is why it's close to, right? Passive. Right? He's saying, why would you say that you can destroy it in any way? So like Binyamin before, that's not really destroying. Right? Right? Binyamin said throwing it into the wind is not destruction. Right? What is it? It's scattering, right? What is, does it accomplish destruction? No. What does it accomplish, Binyamin?
Dispersion.
Dispersion, which, so why is that significant? Because I no longer have chametz. When they say hashpatato b'chol davar, what they really mean is that the mitzvah of tashbitu is make sure that I don't have chametz. But what is Rabbi Yehuda saying? By saying that it's sreifa, what is he saying? I mean, mitzvah shechayel b'hachefza, the only reason I'm letting you do it is because Reb Chaim uses chefza, so it's clearly that's what he wants from me, right? Masha'en kein in mitzvato b'sreifa, I mean, mitzvah shechayel b'hachefza shalachametz. Dechala bo din sreifa. If you say you have to burn it, what does that mean for Reb Chaim?
That it is a chiyu that what? Inheres in chefza. What does that mean?
I don't know if that word helped you. Right? What does that mean?
Yes.
Right? The chametz must be destroyed. Right? Sreifa isn't just, I have to burn it. right? He's not saying, right, you could have said, this. They both agree that it's a mitzvah and the gavra. I need to get rid of my chametz. And the question is, how do I get rid of it? He says, no. If I tell you you need to get rid of it in any way, what is that really telling you? That I have a responsibility to get rid of it, but the chametz, right, it's not about the chametz, it's about me. But if I say I have to burn it, then it's not just a chiyuv in me. It's not just that I'm obligated to get rid of chametz, but the chametz must be destroyed, right? It's an obligation that emerges from, right? There's inheres in the object. Now, one second. Now, let me just get these sentences out and then, right? Now, why is this important for him? So he says something very fundamental. He says, listen, Tosfot says that the reason that the ashes become mutter is nasei mitzvah, right? The mitzvah is done. But Reb Chaim says there are only certain types of mitzvah wherein the mitzvah being done matters to the object, right? Because what does nasei mitzvah so really mean? Does it mean, let's translate the words, does nasei mitzvah so mean I did a mitzvah with it?
No.
Its mitzvah was done. Meaning the only time that nasei mitzvah so transforms the object is where the obligation isn't really about the person, but the object itself, right, needed to be. So we've seen language like this in Chametz. Remember the Radbaz? It is the Yetzer Hara. Now, I may need to destroy it, but he's clearly telling you that there's something about Chametz itself, right, that is objectionable, is noxious, is metaphysically noxious, right? Maybe. Right, but at least Tashbitu. Right, so now he says, Nasik mitzvah, though, isn't magic. It's not, I did a mitzvah, now it becomes permitted. It's what? If an object requires destruction, then once I destroy it, halacha recognizes that this is not the same object anymore. Why? Because since the Torah said this object needs to be treated in a certain way, when the object was treated in that way, right, it has now reached its conclusion, right? And now what happens later is irrelevant. But what if I choose to burn chametz, but I didn't have to? Right? So what does Reb Chaim say?
You didn't actually change halacha.
Exactly. Meaning, yes, a mitzvah was done, but was a mitzvah done in it? No, I chose to use fire as my way of getting rid of my chametz. But since I didn't have to burn it, right, did the burning fulfill like some telos, right? It's, right, if you think about it in an Aristotelian way, right? It's, right, the point is that, right, you have to think here teleologically, right? Right? You have to think, what does teleologically mean? Right? Right? Aristotle talks about things as having goals and the way you define what an object should do in life is by pondering its telos, right, its goal, and every object should pursue its goal. The telos of chametz is, according to Yehuda, to be burnt. According to the Chachamim, it has no telos at all, right? The object is irrelevant. I can't own it, right? But there's nothing, the object doesn't have an end goal. Halacha hasn't given it an end goal. Right, I have an end goal, which is to get rid of the chametz. But the chametz, there's nothing inherent in the chametz. So therefore, he says nasei mitzvato means that the telos has been reached, its goal has been accomplished, and that is the end of the line. And now it's no longer chametz. But that only works if, right, there was a mitzvah in the object, inherent in the object. And so let me just read it inside. So he says, in order to trigger this, nasei mitzvato, that the mitzvah was done, it has to be the mitzvah of the object was done. As nitar achavetz, then the object can become permitted. V'lo kisha bailim kimu mitzvah deramya alaihu, not when what? The person fulfilled the mitzvah that he had to do, yehenitar bazeh achetza, right? Just because I did a mitzvah I had to do doesn't change the object. And therefore the Torah was correct to distinguish bein hashpatato b'chol davar ubein tzreifa de'im hashpatato b'chol davar. If you hold hashpatato b'chol davar, rak ha'bailim kimu mitzvah she'en lem chametz. So what happens when you burn chametz or scatter it to the wind is that you did something. And therefore the ashes aren't permitted. But if the mitzvah itself is to burn it, now Reb Chaim uses this to explain Lav Hanita Klase. Because what does he say? Lav Hanita, right? Then in the second paragraph, right? I'll say it outside and maybe we'll come back to it inside. But in the second paragraph, he now applies the same analysis to explain Lav Hanita Klase. He says, Lav Hanita Klase only works to avoid Malkut if what?
Actually fix it.
Yeah, if you actually fix it, right? But what would it mean to actually fix it? It would have to be, he said, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a lav hanita klase. Why?
Because
the lav inheres in the object, right? The chametz should not exist, and therefore there's a way of fixing it, which is destroy the object, and now it's solved, right? But if it's in the gavra, I've now had chametz. The fact that I destroy it didn't change the fact that I own chametz. Right? If its identity is wrapped up, right? The object is central, so by destroying the object, I have really rectified the situation. Right? But it's in the gavra, so I own chametz for 4 days of Pesach, and then I destroy it. I didn't undo that. Right? I just own chametz for less time. Right? But I didn't fix it. You can only say that burning chametz fixes it if the problem is somehow rooted in the object, such that destroying it somehow undoes it, right? And therefore, he says, "Lav anita klase." It's only lav anita klase according to Yehuda, not according to the Chacham. Okay, that's a little bit more of a complicated analysis, but let's leave that for a second. And if we have time; we'll come back to it more in depth. Okay, just 1 second. Let me just clarify it one more time. Right. So, is this the same as the Minchas Chenoch? No, in very important ways. Right? Why is it not the same as Minchas Chinuch? Because at first glance, does this look like active passive? It looks a little bit like active passive, right? Like, except Reb Chaim is more radical. Because what does Reb Chaim say? The Minchas Chinuch assumes that what? According to Minchas Chinuch, I don't own chametz. Was I mekayim a mitzvah?
Yeah.
Yes, a passive mitzvah. According to Reb Chaim,
no.
Not really. Right? Exactly. Right? According to, right, so you see there's actually different levels of passivity. Right? That the Minchas Chinuch says that the lowest he can possibly, the least mitzvah he can conceptualize, the least active he can conceptualize is that if I don't have chametz, then I passively didn't have chametz. Right? Reb Chaim says, no, if you hold like the Chachamim, right? Correct. There's no mitzvah at all, right? There's an isra on the gavra to own chametz, right? But tashbitu isn't properly an assay at all. It's not a normal assay. It's not even an assay that can be filled passively. It's
an isra.
Right? Like, because it, right, meaning it is like, because it has to be dissociated, right? I'll read you. Right, I'll read you here, just,
Ari, is there any way you can, like, move this, I can't, from the talking, just like, I can't, you know.
Let me just read you a line from Luchamstein, right? He says, Havanot shal minchal chinuch v'shal grach domot zeh lo zeh. Right, there's a similarity between minchal chinuch and the Reb Chaim. Ach chayem hevdel misuyam beinen, but there is a difference. Lefiyam minchal chinuch, Ein safek shemitzvah tashbitu, hi mitzvah aseh she'efshar le'kayma b'ofen chiyuvi. Right?
I mean, according to the Minchas Chinuch, well, no, I should rephrase it. I overstated the case. According to the Minchas Chinuch, what? I don't have to fulfill it actively, right? It's passive. But what if I do burn it? Then I did a mitzvah, right? I did a mitzvah, right? It's a question, is it an active or passive mitzvah? But I could do it actively if I want, right? But according to Reb Chaim, what, right? If according to Menachos Chaim, if I do burn the chametz, did I fulfill the mitzvah actively or passively? Actively, right? Potentially. According to Reb Chaim, what's he saying? That this is like, it's a definitional passivity. And therefore, even if I choose to actively destroy it, it doesn't matter, right? The action doesn't count, right? There is no action, right? There is no action. I did an action, so what, right? It's a meaningless action. The only meaning of it is passive. So according to Reb Chaim, according to the Chachamim, 100% you don't need to buy chametz. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what do you think? If you didn't have chametz now, get rid of it. Exactly. It's avoiding having chametz. Even if I do it actively, it is a definitional passive state. Right? Now, what about Rabbi Yehuda? What do you think Rabbi Chaim would say for Rabbi Yehuda? Right, exactly. So Reb Chaim, on the one hand, is stronger, right, has a stronger notion of passivity, but on the other hand, his uber strong conceptualization of Rabbi Yehuda actually doesn't necessarily mean you have to buy chametz, because what is it saying? If I have chametz, it now has a telos, which requires destruction. But that doesn't take the next step to Michal Skinuch, which is, I need to acquire something that has that telos destroyed. That's not, is that once I have it, the chiyuv to destroy it is very, very strong, inherent in the object, right? It's a quite interesting category that way. What? Maybe you're trying to analyze this. Yeah, maybe. Now, who disagrees with this analysis? Guys, who disagrees with this sharp distinction between the Rebbe and the Chachamim? What? You mean Rebbe Kivager? Very good. Ezra's 100% right. Right? Who disagrees with this? Rebbe Kivager! Right? Rebbe Kivager doesn't agree with this. Because what is Rebbe Kivager's question? Right, Rabbi Kivager pushes back on the door. Why? Because what does he say? I don't understand. Very good, right? He says, I don't understand. According to Chacham, it should also be mutter. What does that mean? What does he think? Right? He thinks they should be the same, but why should they be the same? Is he strengthening Rabbi Yehuda? Sorry, is he weakening Rabbi Yehuda, or is he strengthening the Chachamim? Right, Rabbi Kivager assumes that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim should be equivalent on this plane, right, of Ephron Asur or Ephron Mutter. Right, is he strengthening the Chachamim or weakening Rabbi Yehuda? Yeah, right, he's strengthening Rabbi Yehuda, because why? Right, is Rabbi Chaim, now, the two models that Rabbi Chaim proposes are very suggestive. Right? Then one way of thinking about it is that chametz is responding to a reality for the person, right? That I can't have chametz. And the other is that destruction of chametz is responding to the telos of chametz itself, right? Hold on for a second, right? But this isn't obvious, right? This isn't obvious because you could argue that if that's what the Chachamim meant, and what should they have said? Derek, what should they have said? If what they meant was the only value to chametz, to get tashbitu, is making sure I don't have chametz, what should they have said? They should have said that. They should have said, yes, right? They should have said something like that. Instead, what did they do? They say take some sort of initiative, right? So their machloket might not be between, right? That's a gavra, active, passive. What might it be? Right, meaning what action will respond to that reality in the object, and therefore if I choose to burn it, then now has it reached its telos? Through the, yes, right? I'm going away from Chaim, right? I'm saying, because Rabbi Kiva Eger goes away from Chaim, Rabbi Kiva Eger assumes that Misvara, according, now, he's really assuming two things, right? One is that what? That the Chachamim also see inherent value in destruction per se, and the second is? No, I mean destruction, right? And two is that therefore if I burn it, right? And that fulfills the destruction, so that accomplishes something, right? Not just the mitzvah, but it changes the chametz in some way, right? Now, there's another way of reaching the same conclusion, which is not nasit mitzvah tah, which is maybe the chachamim, right? All of this assumes that, according to the chachamim, it is an absolutely equivalent, whether I choose to burn it or I choose to destroy it in some other way, right? But the Chachamim might have a different chiddush, which is? Well, the other way around. That destroying it, burning, might still be ideal. Right. That it's a kula. Right? Right. Another reason to say that even the Chachamim would agree that Ephraim Mutter is maybe they don't say that you shouldn't burn it. What do they say? You don't absolutely have to. Give me some evidence that the Chachamim might hold that. That burning is ideal, it's just not necessary. But therefore, if you do burn it, it changes the object in the way that it would. What? So give me evidence. So no one actually read this Gemara, but that's okay, I didn't give it to you. But if you look at the continuation of the Gemara, you'll see that the Chachamim say, you know why we think that you should destroy it in any way? Because burning is a kula. Why is burning a kula? Why is it lenient? Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, what happens if you can't make a fire on Erev Pesach?
You don't have to burn
it. You don't destroy it. And they say that it's a kula. Right? What does that imply? Right? That is the better way. It's just that, but they don't want to limit themselves to burning. Right? They're not saying that burning isn't ideal. They're just saying it's not the only way. I thought you were going to say something else. The other raya, just from our practice, is that who do we paskin like? Chachamim. And how do most of us get rid of our chametz? By burning it. That's not an accident. Right. Okay, but who specifically takes on Reb Chaim this way? It's Rabbi Kiva Eger by implication, but, I mean, okay. The Avnei Milulim doesn't actually challenge him directly, but Avnei Milulim makes this point very clearly. So you look at the last source of the page, the Avnei Milulim says, Lufimah shekatavnu. Even if you hold like the Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda, that you don't need to burn it per se. Since if you do burn it, then what? It is a mitzvah. Afro mutar. Afro, guys. Afro mutar. Right, the ashes become permitted. Kaven did aved mitzvato because the mitzvah was done. Umiyishum lahachi lo chasiv ela basar b'chalav minamik barin shein mitzvato lekavro. There are other things like basar b'chalav that are among the category of those buried. Ulalimo manayin because the only mitzvah is to bury it and hide it from your eye. Umiyishum lahachi efer asur, and that's why the ashes are prohibited. So what's he saying? According to the Chachamim, what? What does he think in the Chachamim? Do they, right? He says no. Both the Chachamim and the Yehuda think what? That's the Nafkamina. Conceptually, what do they hold? That destruction, the Chiyuv of Biur of Tashbitu inheres in the object. And that what's the ideal way to do it? Burn it. The only thing you're arguing about is whether you can accomplish it b'diavad in a different way. But fundamentally, they're arguing quantitatively in how do you destroy the chefza, not whether it's a chiyuv on the gav or on the chefza. Right? Just look at his, and he thinks that this is the machloket between the Rosh and the Rambam. And he writes, "Amnam dat harosh mivuar disfirle de chametz efro asur." The Rosh says that the dirt is asur. Bafilo achim pasuk chachamim. He just thinks you're allowed to burn nikvarn if you want. Right? So you don't have to worry about the whole machloket, but what does he think? Right? Right? Right, makes this very sharp distinction that according to the Chachamim, the mitzvah is completely passive, it's totally in the Gavra. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's in the Chefza. The Avnei Miluim says, no. Even according to Chachamim, what? One of two possibilities. Either it's always in the Chefza, right? Or, at the very least, it can be accomplished in the Chefza through Sreifa, right? So you don't, right? So the models exist, right? So again, there are two models here, right? This is not really active passive, right? The question Chaim raises is Biur Chametz really about the person, or is it about the object, right? The Nafka Mina for him is, does the dirt become, right? Do the ashes become mutter, right? Because according to him, Nasik Mitzvato requires that the object had some telos, and I fulfilled the telos of the object. Reb Chaim says, well, the only way to say that there is a goal that defines the object is if you have to destroy it in a very specific way. But if you can do it anyway, that shows it's really about you and not the object. And therefore, according to Chachamim, like the tour, the object is, the ashes remain usher forever, right? According to Chachamim, if you burn it, it becomes mutter, right? But it's possible to say that according to, and this is Reb Akiva Eiger as well, that the Chachamim either one of two things. Either what? Always agree in principle to Rabbi Yehuda that hashbatato, right, that the hashbata is inherent in the object. What do they argue about quantitatively? What counts as destruction? Right? Or, secondarily, what might they hold? That you actually have a choice. Right? That according to Chum, you can choose to suffice by simply dissociating the gavra from the object, but there's an ideal which is burning, which fulfills this. No, what do the Chachamim say? The Chachamim can either say that however I destroy it, it's a mitzvah in the chefza. No, model one is that however I destroy it, you should still conceptualize as a mitzvah in the chetzah. Well, there is no afer unless they burn it, but that's a technicality, right? The second is to say that no, they actually think there are two possible models. You can either choose to dissociate from the object or to destroy it. But if you choose to destroy it, what are you doing? Responding to a reality that's inherent in the object and not just to yourself. There is none. There isn't fundamentally for this purpose, right? Because according, the only way you're going to get ashes is if you burn it, right? 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 Meaning, so there is no nafkamina here, but I'm just saying that what he's pointing at is the Chum don't have to disagree with Yehuda on this point. They can argue, right? Well, Chaim makes this very sharp distinction. And he says, if you think you destroy it anyway, that's a mitzvah of the Gavra to dissociate from Chametz rather than inherent in the object. And if you have to burn it, it's inherent in the object. But that's not necessarily the case. It could be that according to the Chachamim, it is a chiyuv that adheres in the chefza, but all forms of destruction respond to that. Or you have two options, and if you choose to go the route of burning it, then you haven't only been mekayim the mitzvah in the gavra, but you've also been mekayim the mitzvah in the right in the chefza. You've responded to that in the object, which would lead you to say that a friend mutar. And therefore, right, the models may exist. According to Reb Chaim, that's the difference between the Huda and the Chachamim. But the truth is that not necessarily. Right? Okay. I can't keep giving you like this, okay?